Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team assemble!
Of Joel Klatt, who will join us here in just about 5 or 6 minutes. Andrew Mason at DenverFan.com writes, there's one thing that all of the Broncos' six losses have in common. In all six losses...
Air one score losses?
No.
Yes. Damn it.
No. They're 3-5 in one score games. But in all six of their losses...
All six of their one score losses have come by one score or less.
Correct.
I knew
you'd master this.
Wow.
So at one point from the second quarter on in all six losses, the Broncos had win probabilities over 50%. At Seattle, 70%. Vegas, 59%. Indy, 94%. Chargers, 77%. Jets, 54%. Last week, 84%. They're up 10-0. 84%. So they've had these close games. They've been in control of their own fate, and they've let him slip away. If there is one consistent characteristic of a team that loses close games, it is what?
It is lack of attention to detail. Critical moments require critical focus. The Broncos don't have that. Offensively, they don't have that. But you could say defensively, you know, the one drive they gave up, where they get the ball back in the second half with about 2 minutes left and a 10-0 drive or 10-0 lead, and they gave up a drive. Is that the play where they hit the flea flicker? Is that the drive they hit the flea flicker on, or did they just go down the field with 2 minutes? I can't remember what that was. Anyhow. So, critical moments, critical focus. You have to have critical focus in critical moments. And they jump off sides. They put themselves in harm's way. They give up a big play. Like, there's not that critical focus in the critical moments.
James Merrillat writing at DenverFan.com that upon further review, maybe we should have seen this coming with Nathaniel Hackett. Oh, great. Here we go. Captain Hindsight. So,
Chicken Little Hindsight.
The idea of that, well, the point he makes, and some people raise this question with Nathaniel Hackett, but nope, nobody wanted to hear it, because we needed to have an offensive genius. When some people were saying, you know, there wouldn't be anything wrong with a Dan Quinn.
No, we can't have another defensive guy, can't have a retread.
I told you how much I like Jonathan Gannon.
Need to have a first, well...
He's a defensive guy. Doesn't matter. Yeah. No, we had to have an offensive guy. And right. James... Come on now, put your hand up. Yes, you did like Kevin O'Connell, but you're also on record as saying that you'd be fine with Nathaniel Hackett. His point is that Hackett was hired with the idea, he's got the eau de LaFleur on him. Mm-hmm. He's got the eau de Rodgers on him. Mm-hmm. He was an offensive coordinator in Green Bay. This is what you're getting. But he didn't call the plays. That was the point. Yes, he was the offensive coordinator, just like Justin Outen is the offensive coordinator here. Outen doesn't call the plays.
O'Connell didn't call plays either, though.
I know, but Nathaniel Hackett, I know, we're talking about Hackett and LaFleur. Yeah. Hackett didn't call the plays, okay? We weren't getting a guy that was calling Aaron Rodgers' plays. Now, what James points out is that prior to his stint with the Packers, Hackett had been an NFL offensive coordinator in 4 seasons. Only once was his offense in the upper half of the league in points scored. 2013 in Buffalo, 22nd in points. 2014 in Buffalo, 18th in points. 2017, Really good year. They were fifth. 2018, everything came apart, and he was fired 11 games into the season. So we're watching an offense that's struggling to score 14, 15 points per game. The 4 years that he has been an offensive coordinator, 2013, they scored 21 points per game. 2014, 21 points per game. That last year in Jacksonville, 18 points per game. The one outlier was that 2017 Jacksonville team that really should have gone to the Super Bowl. They averaged 26 points per game that year. Right. But you know what they did a lot that year?
They ran the
snot out.
They had a game against the Steelers that year where they ran the ball, I think 18 straight plays on a drive. Just, I mean, just absolutely snatched the will out of their hearts. So, and, you know, in Buffalo at the time, who was the quarterback? Tyrod Taylor.
I think that was Tyrod Taylor.
I mean, and you're talking about Tyrod Taylor. You're talking about Blake Bortles. I mean, before we start revising history, it's not like they were offensive juggernauts to start with. So,
but you know what? And this goes back to the idea that Nathaniel Hackett, if you're going to get fired and you're on the fast track to being fired, do it your way.
Yeah.
And this shotgun all the time, throwing the ball 40 times. The 1 year that he had a really good offense as an offensive coordinator calling the plays in Jacksonville, 2017. Guess where Jacksonville ranked that year in rushing?
First.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it honestly, it wasn't even close. They finished... They were number one.
Leonard Fournette's rookie.
They were number one.
If I'm not mistaken. By the way, 17 of the first 23 snaps, they passed the ball last week. 21 of their first 24 snaps, they're in shotgun.
They're not running the offense that he wants to run.
I don't believe so, no.
That's Russ's fault for demanding that it be run his way, but it's ultimately Nathaniel Hackett's fault because you are the coach.
And that's
supposed to be in charge.
That's where I fall. I'm like, dude, it's your team. You're the coach. He's the player. And we're going to do the things that I want to do.
Good article. Check it out. DenverFan.com. All right. One more. Ted Lasso is looking out for U.S. soccer players as we get set for the start of the World Cup that I know you're very excited about.
Extremely, extremely happy about this.
Ethan Horvath will be the first Coloradan on the U.S. men's national team for the World Cup. He's a goalkeeper. So Ted Lasso, played by Jason Sudeikis, they did a thing where they put up billboards in the hometowns of all of the U.S. soccer players. And it's basically an inspirational Ted Lasso type believe speech that's on a billboard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a long message on a billboard.
Right.
It's not easy to read. You got to actually pay attention. But Horvath got one of these as well.
Ted Lasso is awesome. Have you watched it?
So here's what Lasso says to our guy Ethan Horvath.
Okay.
You sure must have been living the high life in Highlands Ranch. You're practically next-door neighbors of the Rockies, a stone fortress, protecting the land, kind of like you on the national team competing in the game of games. You're the rock in a hard place. Ain't nothing's going to get past you. You'll be taking down scissors and paper. I mean, paper really has no business being rock in the first place, like you all have never heard of paperweights. One thing I know rock solid, nobody's going to cross Mount Horvath. It's Ted Lasso, man. I can see Ted Lasso delivering that speech.
A great, great speech.
It's a great show.
I've never watched it, but it's a great show. I don't have to watch it. I can tell that it's great.
You would love it.
Yeah.
I saw a clip. You would love it.
And he's in a bar throwing darts. And he talks about Walt Whitman.
Yeah, that's a great.
Because I read this thing, but be curious, not judgmental. Because if they were curious, they'd know that I played darts with my daddy every Sunday after church or whatever it was.
Right.
That's an awesome, awesome
movie. Wow.
Trying to get you to watch Yellowstone. Trying to get you to watch Fresh Prince. I'm trying to get you to watch Ted Lasso.
Can't do it.
I can't.
Come on.
Can't do it.
All these long airplane rides you're on.
I'm watching films so I can do breakdowns for you when you ask me
Exo's Thunderclap.
Okay, let me look at it.
You ought to not. We have Joel. All right. Joel Klatt joins us for his weekly visit. Uh-huh. Lead college football analyst at Fox Sports. And he joins us courtesy of Audi Flatirons.
Go ahead there, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, you want me to? You want me to go? Joel, well, one, man, it's great to have you, Joel. It's always exciting.
Oh, boy, pleasure is always on this side of the table.
Well, we appreciate that. Hey, did you watch the debacle that was the Broncos-Tennessee game and the just the offensive wizardry of what they're doing right now?
Can't get that 3 hours of my life back.
No. Like, seriously, like, okay, so I always think about this, Joel. The difference between calling plays and calling an offense. The difference between having things, like, it's like building a house, right? You have to start excavating the dirt. Then you got to lay down the footings. Then you got to build the foundation. And all these things stack one upon another. It's almost like, for me, I'm watching them going, okay, we're going to run Russell's favorite play, and then we're going to run my favorite play, and then Russell's favorite play, and then my favorite play, and then Russell's favorite, and nothing feels like it ever meshes together. There doesn't feel like they ever create any building blocks to an offense. Am I taking crazy pills, or do you see some of the same stuff?
No, I see the same things, and sequencing is all off. You know, I think that there's a huge misconception out there that offenses or football teams run plays. You should never run plays. You don't learn plays. You learn a system. And the system only works if it's being used as a system. And it needs to build off of each other. What it really needs to do is it needs to operate in some sort of sequential order so that you can affect the defense, right? So it's not anything other than the fact that you are trying to put defenders in conflict. You're trying to give them things to look at that is one, either confusing or two, hard to react to. So I don't see either of those from Denver. They're not very creative with their structures, number one. Number two, they don't have any commitment to the run game whatsoever. I just don't believe that you can be an offense that is all that successful at the NFL level if you're not going to get downhill in your run game at some moments. And it's really tough to do that when you're in shotgun, the amount of times that Denver is in shotgun. When you look around the league, what you're starting to see is there was a big transition, I would say, about 4 or 5 years ago to majority shotgun throughout the league. And that's still somewhat the case, but it's actually lessening a little bit. The percentage is going down a little bit because the importance of being under center and getting downhill in the run game is very important. Why is that important? Well, it's important because of conflict. You've got to put defenders in conflict. And what started to be evident is that it's incredibly difficult to put second and third level players in conflict when your run game is predicated out of the shotgun, because they can see what's going on to a far greater degree when you're in the shotgun than when your quarterback is under center. Just this one element is what impacts it so greatly. In the shotgun, the quarterback's back is never to the defense. And if you don't turn your back to the defense with tight elbows where they can't see the football and don't know what is coming, then you can't impact them and put them in conflict to the degree necessary to do things like throw a play action pass down the field. If you can't threaten down the field, guess what? It's harder on your run game. Everything impacts another in an offensive system. And you know, to your point, when I watch Denver, they just sit there and call plays. And it's like, oh, this was our favorite run concept that we like on Tuesday night. Let's call it. But they haven't built into that. They don't get into structures that I feel like give them advantageous numbers. They don't make it difficult on the defense to declare strength or change that strength as far as like movement and shifting. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting all worked up because I hate it.
Well,
I hate watching them.
Yeah, as do I, and I'm in the same spot as you. I want you to explain, because I've tried to explain it, and I probably won't ever do it as eloquently as you do it, but when I see a quarterback slapping his hand and stomping his foot and then a guard looking between his legs and tapping his center on the ass and then the head bob three times and the snap of the ball, and I think to myself, In shotgun, you can never affect a defense, and you can't use snap count to your advantage. Talk to me a little bit about snap count and what an important weapon that is and what you've done to just basically minimize it out of shotgun.
Yeah, so I think it's one of the more underappreciated aspects or underutilized aspects. The cadence is your greatest weapon to neutralize the pass rush and to make sure that you are getting a little bit of a head start. And in particular on your edges, your offensive tackles. And from shotgun, it's just really hard to do it on the road just because of obviously the noise and the sound barrier. When you get into the mechanics of shotgun on the road, and there's a sound barrier and there's a silent cadence, everything has to be visual, and there's visual cues. The problem is that those visual cues are also available for the defense, and they start picking up on them. And it doesn't matter how many times your center bobs his head or so on and so forth. Like, they're eventually going to pick up on it, and then it's incredibly difficult for your tackles in pass protection. So when you have a cadence and you are giving verbal cues and not visual cues, now I'm controlling everything going on as the quarterback. I control when and where you get to one start and two, when you have to show me the hand that you're holding close to your chest, because every single defense is trying to disguise to some degree. Very rarely do you just get like, hey, we're just lined up and we're going to play this defense and go ahead. You're always going to get some sort of movement. You know, there's always one wheel or two wheels, and the defense is either collapsing on each other or you're trying to get some diagnosis of whether it's man or zone coverage. And so the snap count, it's not just on whether you go on one or two, but it's also what you can do to change the play and get them to reveal their cards. You know, the disguise of the defense can be revealed through things like a dummy color. You know, if I'm using color number, and then said hut, I can do a lot of different things. For instance, and this is what New Orleans used to use quite a bit with Drew Brees, they would go in and on the first play of the series, you would say like, hey, this series, our dummy color is white or yellow, which means if I start the cadence with white or yellow, then I can say hut as many times as possible. We're not snapping the football. And so it would sound like, you know, Drew would get up there and be like, yo, lady! Yeah, and he said, hot! And right then he gets one player to step. And all he needs is one step. And all of a sudden that step revealed the entire disguise that was going on. Now I know your structure, because you've got to be structurally sound. You can't just move willy-nilly around the football field. So now I've got your structure. I can either call a different play with my cadence, or we now know where we can get targeted, like let's say if it's a run concept. So now that we can target our run concept and the count is absolutely accurate, and you're not going to get a free player on us because of the dummy cadence. Now, how do you use the actual on-one, on-two first sound to your ability or to your advantage? Well, use it to your advantage based on situations, okay? Let's just say you're backed up inside your own, you know, 5-6 yard line. Well, the false start's only going to back us up half the distance to the goal. And yet a free 5 yards is going to give us 5 full yards away from the goal line. So guess what I'm going to do every single time I'm backed up? I'm giving the hardest cadence I can possibly give. You know? Booty! We're giving it. Boom! I need to then jump offside. Let's snap the football. Now I can snap the football whether we're, you know, ready for it or not, because the center, as soon as I find somebody in the neutral zone, I'm snapping it. So what I'm talking about here and what you're alluding to is that the cadence is a weapon. The silent cadence is just a way to snap the football. Those are two vastly different things.
My Lord, I got the Vespers right now. Holy smokes. Last question. When you watch this offense, I cannot believe that they're running Nathaniel Hackett's offense. I think they're running what Russell Wilson wants, what Russell Wilson was promised. And that is in direct conflict with what Nathaniel Hackett wants to do. But Hackett is either too scared, too reluctant, or just hasn't been empowered to tell Russ, this is the way it's going to be. Do you think I'm out of bounds or right when I describe the relationship right now between Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson?
I think that that's an easy way out for a coach that should have responsibility. What you see on film, you're either coaching or allowing, and that bolt falls on you. If you're the head coach and you're not man enough to run your own stuff when your job's on the line, because I can tell you this right now, if it doesn't change, he's out, and he's probably out Sunday. So it's like, hey, bro, like, if you want to go down using somebody else's offense, good on you, I guess. But at least in my estimation, like, the buck stops with you. So I don't really care what Russell was promised. I don't really care, you know, anything. Like, if Nathaniel Hackett doesn't run what he's comfortable with and do what he wants to do this week, it's clearly his job is on the line, then he should be fired. So I don't buy that quite as much. I think that that's scapegoating a little bit, because if I'm the head coach, that would have changed a long time ago, you know, and if ownership won't allow it, then I don't want the job anyways. So here's the other part about this. So we can just talk about Russ and Nathaniel Hackett, but if there's some sort of edict from above, and it's like, hey, you've got to run Russ's offense, you know what I would say? Like, all right, you know, like, let's shake hands and let me walk out the door. Because if I can't do what I'm comfortable with and what my identity is and what I know how to do and build and be the designer of an offensive system, if that's my MO and I'm being handcuffed, then get me out of here. So, you know, I don't buy it. I'm not going to sit there and say, like, oh, woe is me for Nathaniel Hackett. Either buck up or get out.
Somebody asked a question on the text line. Where is Joel when he's doing all this screaming? God, I hope he's at a local Starbucks.
No. I'm in my car on the 405, and I will tell you, like, I'm going to actually roll down because there's a guy on a motorcycle. We're stuck in his drive. I'm on the radio. Yeah. All right, brother. He looked at me when I was just shouting, and he was like, what is that? And then he, like, pointed at himself, like, are you shouting at me? And I had to, like, wave him off. Like, no. I'm just giving a hard cadence, man. Don't worry. We're just, we're in a hypothetical backed up situation here.
Right.
You know, driving around on the highway.
Hey, look, I'm not yelling at you.
I'm not yelling at you.
I'm just going hard count.
Yeah. I'm just going hard count on these fools.
We're on my own five right now.
Yeah, that's right. Don't get me going first sound. Oh, no. Man, we're going to get him now. Let's go. No motion, no shit. Let's go. Woo!
Oh, hi, man. We need some more. We need some more first sound. We just do. We just
all right, like, one more first sound on the
just
way
more
out
first
here.
Sound.
All right, here we go. Go ahead.
You just come up, and the key is, Mark, is you give the center a nice firm slap.
Hey,
just
yeah.
Right on.
Let him
butt.
Know you're back there. It's like foreplay. Just let let you know.
And then you just get in there, and it's just a visceral gut sound. That's what first sound is. So you just get in there, and first it's the slap. And you
yeah.
Just like that.
I tell you what, though.
And the guards rolling off the line. Then we come, baby, and the tackle's blocking down. And then I'm reversing out to 6 o'clock. I'm going to extend that ball. I'm going to see the mesh made. I'm going to probably pass that finish, baby. And we're running power. And here comes that guard. He's kicking out. And the fullback's leading up there. He's got the Mike linebacker. And bang, we're downhill, baby, on first down. Woo!
I will say this. Hey, I will say this, Joel. You got to have soft hands on that hard count. If you go on a hard three, you cannot goose me on two. You can't go Hadah! With a goose. You got to have soft hands in there, because if you goose, that ball's coming on two instead of three. It just is the way it works. Hey, it's a natural reaction.
That's why, listen, I agree with you. That's why if we go on three, well, first of all, I never go on two because I can't get a double sound. You see, like on one is set hit, right? Set hut. Like that's what it ends up sounding like. So I'm going to give a big and then three, right? So I'm going to give a double so that I'm goosing you on the first. So I'm goosing you on set or on the second hut, and we're off and running.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like drag racing. I'm smashing that pedal on the yellow. You can't wait for green,
no.
Mike. You wait for green, you're already late.
Yeah. The California Highway Patrol is wondering why there's a certain section of the 405 that are getting all these road rage calls right now. All right, Joel. Great stuff. Great stuff, my man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. Later, boys.
All right, there he goes. Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flat Irons. Poor guy on the bike's like, you yelling at me? No, no, no. This is all about what it means to come out from your own five.
Yes.
Now pay attention.
I love it.
All right, we'll unpack what Joel had to say next.
You're going to need a bigger pouch.
It's time for Schlereth and Evans' big story of the day.
What is this that you're so big?
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big is big. Big is huge.
Oh, so much to process after our conversation with Joel Klatt. I think it just keeps coming back to the same thing. And I do think the best thing that has come out of this whole week of prep and you looking at the film is that I do feel that we're starting to get a clearer picture of what's going on over there. And what seems to be clear to me is the reason why there continues to be a disconnect between Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson is because Nathaniel Hackett has one vision for this offense. Russell Wilson has another vision for the offense. Russell Wilson is either too stubborn or too selfish. And Nathaniel Hackett either doesn't have the guts or the backing to go out and tell Russ this is the way it's going to be. And you wonder why, definition of insanity, every single week it looks the same, is because we've got one guy wanting to do one thing, one guy wants to do another thing, and they just don't fit.
They're just not on the same page. It just doesn't.
But why they're not on the same page? There's just two different philosophies. There's two different visions.
Right. And you can't, like, you can always mesh or amalgamate two different concepts, if you will, if they're married to each other. Like when Joel talked about plays versus a system, right? A system is a series of plays that fit together. So I'll give you for instance. If I'm a pitcher and I've got 4+ pitches, I'm Justin Verlander. 4+ pitches. I got a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. I got a 85-mile-an-hour slider that just is a snapdragon. I got a 80-mile-an-hour hammer that just drops off a table.
Curveball, people.
And I got a change that just makes you buckle. You just buckles your knees. Okay? I'm unhittable. When I'm on, I'm unhittable. You can't hit me. I'll throw a no-hitter. But if I have all those pitches and they all come from a different arm slot, I'll have a 7 ERA and I'll get seeds hit off me. Why? Because there's no deception. I don't hide the ball. What Joel said, and it's a great point, in shotgun, you don't ever hide the ball. People see the ball. What else happens in shotgun? In shotgun, you are about, in the run game, you're about 0.2 seconds slower to the hole. Okay? Approximately 0.2 seconds slower in your run game to get to where you're supposed to get. So with a bunch of backup offensive linemen, you're asking them to hold a block 0.2 seconds longer. The other thing, from a defensive perspective, your linebackers can get another yard depth. So you're eliminating some of the underneath routes just by alignment. They're already there. Because it takes 0.2 seconds longer, they can cheat another yard and a half or 2 yards. Because they'll still meet you at the line of scrimmage once you hand the ball off, if in fact you do. And they can see it. So I'm just telling, I hate shotgun. I hate it. I never ran it in Washington under Joe Gibbs. We never put shotgun, and he didn't believe in it. And it wasn't as prevalent back then. Now, we ran a bunch of it here in Denver when I was here, but our base was all out of under center. So there's a lot of things that I understand about shotgun that make it easier vision-wise for the quarterback, but it makes, to me, it makes most of our jobs harder.
This texter brings up a good question. He says, I think you guys are missing a third option besides Hackett or Wilson. Personnel consistency every week. It's a completely different team. You can't trust who's next to you if every day and every week there's somebody different. Nobody's even had a chance to play together. If I'm a carpenter and I work with a different tool bag every day, I'll never know where the tools are or which one to use to do the job properly. Okay? Is that a valid excuse?
No. I mean, it's a good point. I understand where you're coming from. And continuity is hard. But continuity is hard when you don't have a real system, when nobody knows what it is we're doing. So it may take a little bit of time to feel that different tool belt, if you will, but you still have all the tools at your disposal. Now, you may be a little bit slower or not as experienced or whatever, but if you're getting into the same system and you know exactly...
Look at the defense.
Right.
Look at the defense. They've had guys in and out of the lineup, different combinations.
And they're playing...
Has anything changed?
Exceptionally well.
There you go.
Yeah. And so I just had a thought.
All right, hold that thought.
Yeah, I have... Yeah, okay, wait. I don't know what the thought is. I'm going to write it
down. Can you tease it?
Yeah.
Can you do the tease? Okay, everybody. Mark's going to do the tease.
Okay.
Oh, this is good.
I'm going to explain to you why having a system is imperative for your offensive players.
Ooh, just gave me chills.
I don't even know if that was the right thing, but
that,
you know,
sounds good.
I'll get to it.
It's coming up next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Mark, you're in the zone this week. Not only breaking down the film like nobody else can do in this town, explaining what's going on, the problems. Now you're even taking over this show. Now you're even tossing out the teases. So go ahead.
Ah.
Pay off the tease.
What did I say?
What was the tease?
I don't know.
Why it's so important that an offense has a system.
Why? Yeah, because... you know, I think we just talked about some deception stuff, you know, and equated it to a pitcher and all that kind of stuff. So I want, beyond the shadow of a doubt, as an offensive player, to know what we're doing, right? To understand all the nuance of what we're trying to do, why we're trying to run these plays. Like, not only here's what we're going to run, but here's what we're going to get. Here's why we're going to get that. Here's why we're running it. And here is the result that we're going to have based upon what we're running. And so I want to know what we are doing, what the kind of concept is, how we're leaning on that concept to develop other things, right? I want to know exactly that stuff. And I want to be fairly predictable, Mike. You know, I always talk to you about having an identity. And the importance of an identity, even though the team that you're playing understands what you're going to do to them. So let's say we're going to major in wide zone, right? We are going to run the snot out of wide zone on you. You know it's coming. We know it's coming. How do you stop it? Right? So you've got to develop a plan to get that stopped. And you're going to spend, what, the majority of your week working to stop that. Well, we're going to run it anyhow because we can run it against anything. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to run out of different personnel groupings. We're running out of different motions, different formations. We're going to change our entry point of our fullback. So one time he's going on, you know, he's going on a sift and he's got the defensive end. And the next time he's sifting across, he's got the Will linebacker. Next time he's leading through and he's got the mic. We're going to change. But nothing changes for us up front. One guy maybe has to make a change. So we're going to run that over and over and over again, and we're going to get you to play that scheme. And then you know what we're going to do? We're going to hit you with our adjunct run plays. And you're going to be so busy trying to stop that you're not going to have an answer for the other things. Now, wait, let me just stop you, because I know you want to ask a question.
Well, I'm actually going to, but I want to poke a hole in that whole theory.
No, you can't.
Okay? I will.
All right, you won't. But here's the principle of knowing that stuff and being able to do that stuff is the defense knows it's coming. They do. But the confidence that you gain as an offensive player, when you know beyond the shadow of a doubt, I don't care if they run a 3-4, if they run a 35 defense, 37 defense, 57 defense, 25 defense, 4-3 defense, 4-9 defense, I don't care what they run. There is nothing you can do to me that I am not mentally prepared for, because I have run the, I can run this play in my sleep and then build off of that.
Okay, that sounds great, and it's awesome, and you guys were able to do that better than anybody during that three-year run you had with the back-to-back Super Bowls. Here's the problem. Pretty much every single week you guys went out, it was Gary Zimmerman at left tackle, Mark Schlereth at left guard, Tom Nalen at center, Brian Habib or Dan Neal at right guard, and Tony Jones at right tackle. Very few weeks did you guys have to go out there with Gary Zimmerman's third stringer, Mark Schlereth's third stringer, Tom Nalen's third stringer, Brian Habib's third stringer. You guys never, Tony Jones' third, you very rarely had the kind of dismantling of your offensive line that this group has had. And this group, even when they were trotting out their starters, wasn't that great of an offensive line. It was an average offensive line, and they're going two or three deep now.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, as you're trying to poke a hole in theory, and again, you know, 6 years I've worked with you, you still don't understand the game. So let me ask you this. What's harder? Asking third stringers to do things they haven't done, that they don't understand, that they don't really understand the concept of or don't have a foundation in? You know, flipping around and say, well, last week, this team that played this team did a really good job on pin and pull stuff. So even though we haven't run it, and we're all doing walkthroughs, we're going to run pin and pull stuff this week. Yeah, I know you guys. I know you guys don't have nuance in that. Man, they ran a tight end counter that's been really in vogue throughout the league, where the tight end is the lead blocker, the guard pulls behind him. So it's a different form of counter. Normally, the guard is the lead, and the tight end pulls behind. But this is something that I've seen across the league with several different teams. The footwork of the back was atrocious. I don't know what they're doing. Obviously, they stole that play from somebody. And this happens all the time. It happened in my days, you know, in Washington and here in Denver. Hey, man, we really like this play, but we use it as not the base. We use it as a complementary play. But it didn't use counter footwork to the outside. It used a step back and straight down as opposed to, you know, taking off on the proper angle for counter. Now, I'm an expert in counter because that's all we ran in Washington. Like, that's what we based out of. So I understand how counter and the footwork of the back is supposed to work. So the first one, they get the DN screaming down and basically the tight end is forced to log him, meaning pin him inside. So wide open, outside lane, should have gotten 15, 20 yards on the run. The footwork stopped the running back from being able to get to the outside. That's a play we ripped off from somebody else and don't understand the nuance of it. Footwork was, I looked at it six times and I go, how is that the footwork you're using? You're running a downhill 14-15 play on a counter play. You basically, with the footwork of the back, you've taken yourself out of a position to get that guy to the outside if exactly what happened. So the bottom line is what I'm telling you is if we have a core foundation and everybody understands that, then at least we have a fighting chance with backups. And by the way, running the ball is 10 times easier than dropping back 42 times.
Leave you with this.
All right.
All year long, Hackett's talked about, Russ has talked about, hey, if we just basically keep working at this and avoid some of the mistakes, this thing will work. This thing will click. In your opinion, based on what you've watched all week, if they continue to do the same thing, do you see any chance that this offense will finally click? If they continue to have the same play calling, the same tendencies, all that stuff, will it click just by sheer repetition?
Not a chance. I didn't stutter. Not a chance. They may hit a couple big plays like they have. I mean, they've hit big plays, right? They had the play to
Virgil.
Virgil. They had the play to KJ Hamler a couple weeks ago.
Huge.
And they've had some big plays. Big plays in this league, especially the way defensive play right now, don't just happen.
Absolutely.
Like, occasionally somebody blows a coverage like they did in Tennessee and you get a big play. They're few and far between. Big plays are created because you have a system and you have made somebody play something over and over and over again, and then they see it and they bite. And you know what happens when they bite? We got them. You just keep chucking it down the football field and think that's a recipe for success? Let's just keep running verticals. Eventually we'll hit one. You may hit one. You know what that's worth? 6 points. Oh, we lost 9-17 again. Huh. I wonder what's going on. I mean, if that's your recipe, then God bless you.
No chance. Keep doing the same thing, hoping that it's just a matter of repetition. No chance.
Zero. In just the way that I was brought up to play in this game, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't.
It's over. We are screwed.
If you keep doing the same thing, yeah, it sounds like it. Okay. All right, we're done. We'll see you again here bright and early tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. We have to get the phrase that pays for Mark to use on the broadcast. So start thinking about it all day today. The phrase that pays, or the phrases. We could have multiple. Mark's good at that. He can work in multiple. But phrases that pay for Mark to use in the broadcast specifically as a nod to you great listeners. So start thinking about that. We'll do that tomorrow. The Players Club coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.